Let's jump right in. Paul Gazelka has joined this show a number of times over the years. He's the former majority leader of the state Senate here in Minnesota. And Paul Gazelka, like all our guests, is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. A great day to chat with Mr. Gazelka because we have a vice presidential debate tonight. A reminder, that debate will be heard right here on WCCO Radio. Once it is done, along with Adam Carter, I will join in, and we'll join in. And we'll give you about 60 minutes, your opportunity to react to Governor Walz and to Senator J.D. Vance. And Paul Gazelka knows Tim Walz well. Obviously, they did not see eye to eye on most issues. And adding to it, about 5-6 weeks ago, Paul wrote a book, Behind the Veil, A Stand Against Governor Tim Walz. And that book is available to you. Again, the book by Paul Gazelka, Behind the Veil, A Stand Against Governor Tim Walz. Paul, always a pleasure. I want to take you through a number of issues here on the approach between Vance and Walz. Vance, and not all interviews have went well, I'll be clear on that, including the childless cat lady talk and the nonsense about the Haitians eating dogs and cats. But to his credit, J.D. Vance has appeared on a number of shows. The Sunday shows, he makes himself very available. He takes interviews, requests. When he's on the road, I think it's a little odd sometimes when he's taking questions with his supporters behind him. Whereas Governor Walz, there was the one combined Harris-Walz interview with Dana Bass. Then there was one recently where he was interviewing somebody who's a dog lover about he and Scout. But very, very limited. How do you think that might affect the two participants in tonight's debate?
Well, I think it gives Vance a leg up because he's getting used to getting all of those tough questions. I mean, you ask tough questions all the time. But I it's going to be interesting because Walz is definitely more emotional. Vance is more rational. I would say both of them have put their foot in their mouth. On Vance's case, he's relatively new into the political realm, and you learn as you go. I mean, I got a lot stronger after a number of years in it. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And I tell people, hey, buy my book, and you can fact check Tim Walz because I literally went from the time he became governor all the way to the end and kept all the text strings and just kind of went back and documented everything. And, he didn't do everything bad in my mind. We did a few things in the beginning where we worked together. It was just after that he kind of emergency powers, the riots and beyond that I was confronted.
Okay. If you could point out the one area where you felt like Governor Walz either did not live up to his responsibility as governor, or you think his decision was most wrong for Minnesota, what would you lay out?
It was definitely his response to the riots. I mean, we went back and forth on COVID, and that was a crazy pandemic. And I can point to many areas now that I look back, and my advice was correct. But the riots after the tragic death of George Floyd, he died on a Monday. The riots started Tuesday. The mayor asked for help on Wednesday. The governor froze. Thursday, the third precinct burned down. He still didn't move. Friday, Wells Fargo burned down 1,500 buildings. I'm texting. I'm pressuring him. I call the White House. And then finally, Saturday, he acts. But it was too late. And then he blamed the mayor, and the mayor showed proof that he asked him, and then he called the guard, the 19-year-old cooks, and it was just terrible leadership in probably one of the worst times in Minnesota ever.
For the person who's listening right now, and not just the Democrat, but the independent person says, you know what, Paul Gazelka is a loyal Republican, so he's going to say whatever you would expect most Republicans to say at this point, what would you say to that person who's the undecided and is looking to hear this, but feels like, well, I know where all the Democrats stand, and I know where all the Republicans stand, and this is just another Republican offering up what is a close firsthand account?
Well, first of all, I have of many people that I have built friendships with on the Democrat side, Governor Dayton still calls me up. I worked with Speaker Hortman to get budgets done, always respectful. And I was always respectful to Governor Walz. So that's kind of how I governed. I feel like you should treat people the way you want to be treated. And so when I'm critical, I think I come from a place that's objective. Yes, I'm a Republican, and yes, I don't think he should be the leader because I don't think he handles the crisis well. And I mean, right now we've got Iran blasting Israel, and it was bad decisions by Biden and Harris giving them $6 billion. I just don't think the combination of Walz and Harris is good in a crisis, and that's why I'm so direct. And one more thing, too.
Sure.
I wrote the manuscript January to June. I was just writing about all of my time in politics and how to make government work in Minnesota. And then he announces that he's VP, and I thought, I got to rush this and get it out because, I just felt it was important to read it, people to read it.
And if you're going to make some money, which is the point of writing a book, why not take advantage when the news is hot? I can't blame you. I'm sure many people would have done the exact same thing. Now, about the governor and debating, I am expecting Vance to be pretty darn aggressive on George Floyd, on COVID policies. Does he want to get personal on the clarification of IUI versus IVF? Maybe he will. I expect him to bring up, considering Vance's military service, Governor Walz and some of the controversy that some people offered up, was the governor telling the truth? What is your sense how you believe Governor Walz will react if some, if not all of that takes place, and how forceful do you expect Governor Walz to be in response?
I think they're both going to be forceful, and I think if it strikes a nerve in Walz, he will get angry or at least very upset. I mean, if you challenge his integrity or challenge his decision making, sometimes he does get very upset. But I think it's going to be very different than the Trump versus Harris debates. I think both Walz and Vance, I think, are much better debaters. And so it's going to be, I'm actually really looking forward to it to see how they interact, because I've been behind the veil, as the book is called, with Walz, but I really have not met Vance. I just saw the movie before he was ever a senator, and briefly saw him in a restaurant in St. Cloud, but I can't say I know him like I know Walz.
Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority, former Senate Majority Leader, is with us. His book, Behind the Veil, A Stand Against Governor Tim Walz. Good timing with the debate today. So let's talk about the Middle East. The Middle East seemingly is unsettled all throughout our lives, no matter when you're born or how long you live. And this is another dramatic, very significant day with Iran responding to Israel's force against Hezbollah and the success Israel's had against Hezbollah the last few weeks, including killing their top leader and a number of the leaders. Iran responds today firing 200 missiles, ballistic missiles, throughout Israel. Once again, the Iron Dome, fairly successful. The U.S. working in coordination with Israel. In fact, about an hour and a half before the missiles started, senior White House officials were telling media sources it was imminent. It was going to happen. So on foreign affairs, Donald Trump is such a wild card. You know, we don't know what Donald Trump is going to say. He doesn't believe much in NATO. Now, his comeback is going to be, look what happened when I was president the first time. The Middle East was more stable. It wasn't completely stable because it never is. And that Ukraine didn't happen. And he'll use that as a contrast against Harris and Walz. As someone who wants Trump and Vance to win, how valid of an argument do you think that is, again, with the undecided voters?
I actually think this is a huge issue that only became bigger today. If you look at, the border is protecting America. Our national policy is something I think suddenly got elevated. And then you have to compare. It's really mostly going to be Harris versus Trump, not the VP candidates. And I was at the Abraham Accords in January of 2020. And that was the first time in 25 years that there had been any signed peace agreement in Israel. And I was aware that Trump took $6 billion and froze it of Iranian assets, and Biden came back and gave it back to them, and that's where that money is being spent now. So I actually think this will be one of the top few issues for the undecided voter right now. And Trump, to me, is a lot like Reagan. That was the first president I voted for, and everybody thought he was going to start a world war, and he was a wild card. And in the end, he worked with Gorbachev, and he told him to tear down the wall. And so that's kind of where I think Trump is. He is a wild card, and people definitely are concerned about him around the world, but he didn't have any wars when he was president because I think people feared him.
On that part, I will accept the Reagan comparison. I think in a lot of other areas, I don't think they're close at all. There's clearly some different views on the $6 billion, how that money was frozen, where it actually went to. But again, on Trump, on the character part, okay, when he's calling Harris mentally disabled over the weekend, when he's calling for 1 hour of rough police work, which I think is insulting to the police, when he goes to Georgia, which is to his credit. By the way, the idea that Harris and Biden weren't involved is nonsense. They can't go as easy as a former president. It's even not easy for the former president to go, so I give him credit for going. But when he says that Kemp cannot get a hold of Biden, when Kemp has already said that he's talked to Biden, and Biden has told him, reach out to me whenever you want. Doesn't that bother you about Trump?
That comparing both Reagan and Trump, I specifically went to national policy. Reagan was just more of a gentleman. I mean, he was forceful, but a gentleman. And that is my approach to government. And so, that's a part of Trump that is never going to change. But it does turn some people off. And
does it turn you off? Does it bother you when mentally disabled and give the police an hour to do whatever they want and lying about, what, it's one thing. I get it. He can have his disagreements, but in a time of crisis, right, I feel like that's like Switzerland. Let's all be together, and to literally lie about Biden and Kemp not talking is sends a wrong message to citizens who believe in Trump when they should know that support is coming.
Yeah, I don't like name-calling and slimy words about any other opponent, whether Trump does it. I mean, I don't know if it's not a swear word, but when Walz told, got caught saying that Trump was a bastard, that kind of stuff, I don't like. I think we are better than that as a country. And there is a lot more of it now than I can ever remember. I'm not going to be that guy. I treat people with respect. I like what Franklin Graham wrote to, President Trump after the attempted assassination, be more generous with your words. You don't have to swear all the time, but that's where I'm at. And we talked about this before. He was not my first choice, but mm-hmm. he is my choice now. And I'm, and there are many people like Mike Pompeo or Bill Barr or others that, we're strongly behind him, but that doesn't mean he's a perfect person. And, I'm most concerned about our national defense and protecting our borders so we don't have just people coming in that we don't even know where they're from. And that, to me, is way more important than personality and whether you're nice or not. I prefer both, but sometimes you don't get that combination.
Yeah, I think for me it's a little more nice, but I understand what you're saying. Paul, always appreciate it. Again, the book from the former Senate Majority Leader, Behind the Veil, A Stand Against Governor Walz. Appreciate it, sir. We'll reach out again down the line.
Yeah, thanks. Just go to Amazon and type in Behind the Veil and you'll get to it. And I really appreciate your show, Chad. You got to tell me what the next great adventure is that I can watch on Facebook, whether it's Hawaii or wherever else you're going.
Somewhere soon, hopefully. So I'll let you know. Thank you, sir.
All right,
I appreciate
buddy. Take
it.
Care.
Paul Gazelka. Tell me, you react to what Paul Gazelka had to say. And for you, a couple of things. What's the number one thing you're watching for the debate tonight, if you're watching it? And foreign affairs, now with this ratcheting up significantly, although Iran's trying to find a way where they respond and not turn this into utter chaos. I don't know if they've struck that chord, but how important is foreign affairs for you on deciding your vote? We're going to be quick next segment, so text right away now. 651-461-9226. Now, Jason's not on today. Was he fired? Did I miss something?
Oh, you missed the memo?
Was Jason fired?
That was a nice run for Jason.
Good
one.
He was either fired or he was in Portugal.
Maybe both.
What if he just says, I'm not coming back from Portugal?
Wouldn't be the worst spot to stay.
That sounds pretty good. Should we get to... Okay, number one reason why, if you're going to watch the debate, Dave Harrigan, the item you want to see is what? What will draw your attention?
I will be drawn to J.D. Vance attacking Tim Walz, I think specifically on George Floyd and the aftermath, considering how close we all were to it right here.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear him say, you know, explain what happened, why it happened, why he acted as he did, why there was inaction, as many people would think, including the two of us, from his office and from others.
Yeah.
And I am very curious to see Tim Walz say, look, J.D., you know, you've said a lot of things that are completely ridiculous, eating the dogs and cats, et cetera.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, right. Also, where Vance could have a little bit of an advantage is just the years in the Senate and now this. And say, you've got a former president, look at the stability. I also, in the military, in the Senate, where's your international experience? Now, Walz is going to say National Guard, but then that leads to an area where Vance, fair or not, is going to attack him. And there are people who have been outspoken in saying when Walz left, did he know about where they were about to be deployed? Others have said not. Others have said you get into criticizing a fellow military member's career itself. But I do think the events of today will cause O'Donnell and Brennan, Norah O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan, have to direct more questions on foreign affairs.
Yes, I mean, has to come up.
All right, let's get to a little bit of rhetoric. Chai Chad, I'm wondering what J.D.'s mix of lies and truth will be. I'm guessing about 50-50. Again, there's no fact-checking tonight. They've made that decision.
Unless they do it themselves.
Yep, Chad, zero respect for that man. How can Republicans overlook all the horrific things Trump said? Tonight I'm watching for a VP who can be a human. I'm looking for honesty and zero name calling. I'll cringe if I hear the word weird. Oh, he's gonna come on. How over the top is he gonna be? Is he gonna be more the Walz we're used to or the over the top guy? I think it's in a debate, I don't think it's gonna be that over the top, is it?
It won't be joyful over the top Walz. He's not gonna be doing, you know, doing that bit, doing the you know, hands to the heart and all that stuff. But I think he's going to be more on the attack than you do.
I'd rather have mean tweets and a blank you-know-what president than be looked on the world stage as pathetic. There are people who feel the way. Our adversaries fear Trump because he's hard to figure out. Talking about Reagan and missiles to Iran. Trump is friendly with dictators. Yeah, that's, I mean, let's not forget who he kisses up to. Now, with China, with the tariffs, he is stronger. But then he lies to us on the tariffs, and it's not going to cost us anything.
Well, it's going to take care of child care costs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be better, by the way, on details than Trump and Harris. Oh, both will be. Right. And this idea that Walz is nervous and inexperienced, who's buying that? They're both nervous. I get that. But he's debated many times. He hasn't had the national stage like this. But the idea is going to be completely out of his water. The Walz folks are trying to throw that out there. I'm not buying it. Yesterday it was Kevin Burke on what Mary Moriarty and the Hennepin Attorney's Office are pursuing on police misconduct records. And Kevin Burke, I'd say, Dave, downplayed it. Said, this has been going on for a long time. It's not that out of the ordinary.
Yeah, basically said he's not concerned about it at all.
Chris Maddle heard the segment. He's the attorney who represented Ryan Lonergan. He's the attorney who was outspoken in eviscerating Mary Moriarty. He heard the interview, wanted to respond. Chris Maddle's next. Okay, so yesterday at this time, we reacted to a Star Tribune story about Mary Moriarty's office, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and we reacted with our friend Kevin Burke, who I've known for a long time. Kevin was a Hennepin County judge for close to 40 years, was a chief judge two separate times. And it was basically about increased interest and pursuing potential police misconduct records by Moriarty's office and a dramatic increase from previous offices. This goes back to two Supreme Court cases regarding due process. Basically, prosecutors need to disclose to the defense any information about a case that would benefit the person in charge. Now, the Tribune played it up. Jeff Day wrote about it. When we had Kevin on yesterday, I was asking him, okay, a lot of people in this area who've paid attention to Moriarty, I'm one of them, I'm not running from that at all, have felt like there have been cases where I don't understand why the charges were there in the first place. I don't understand the charges weren't stronger. And there's been a lot of pushback by police on, is Mary Moriarty, is she on our side? She ran with one position, with a number of positions. But there's been a lot of pushback. So when I think a lot of people saw this story about, now, wait a second, you're on the prosecution side and you're looking for all these records of police misconduct who, in a lot of cases, are on your side. Are you going too far? Burke seemed to say that he felt like what Moriarty was doing was required and was avoiding a lot of either another trial or an overrule. So that's what Kevin Burke said. Chris Maddle, excellent defense attorney, heard the interview and wanted to respond. Chris is known for a lot of cases in town, most recently when he represented State Trooper Ryan Lonergan. Of course, that was a controversial case when Moriarty had charges and eventually dropped them. Chris was very outspoken about it. So, Chris, I always appreciate you coming on. What did you want to say about the Trib story and how Kevin Burke reacted to it yesterday on our show?
Yeah, thank you, Chad. So, yeah, the gist of what retired Judge Burke said is that we really shouldn't be concerned with this new policy because it's not an attack on law enforcement, and it's necessary to get that information regarding law enforcement to judges and even criminal defendants. And there's two things that I wanted to point out on that.
Sure.
Moriarty announced that policy on January 3, 2024, and she charged my client, Trooper Ryan Lonergan, 3 weeks later on January 24, 2024. If it's really true that this new policy is not an attack on law enforcement, then why didn't Moriarty file any such motion in Trooper Lonergan's case? She's filed almost 600 of these motions in other criminal defendants' cases since she announced the policy. Why didn't she file any such motion when she made a cop her criminal defendant? In fact, as you will remember, Moriarty consulted with a use of force expert in October 2023 when that expert essentially told her, you have no case against Trooper Lonergan.
Right.
We then filed a motion to get all the email and text messages that the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, including Moriarty herself, wrote regarding that use of force expert. All of those documents were exculpatory, right? Well, what did Moriarty do with respect to that motion? You guessed it, she opposed it. So listen, this woman is remarkably selective when she claims to be aggressive in pursuit of justice. But believe me, she's taking her foot off the gas when the needle is pointed at her.
Okay, so I can I just follow up that little bit and then get your second point? I certainly understand your passion on your case. You know it very well. And by the way, as someone who's followed closely, I agree with 100% of your characterization. Are there other examples outside of this case involving a member of law enforcement, Ryan Lonergan, where you think there's a pattern to this versus what happened just in the case involving your client?
I have been practicing for over 30 years. Where there is information of police disciplinary files, more often than not, it involves a cop that backs into another car that gets a disciplinary file for it. The rule of Brady is that it has to be material to the defendant. And what Judge Burke said yesterday is that it might be good for the defendant. That is not the law. That is not the law at all. What it says is that it has to be something that goes to the defendant's innocence or would reduce a sentence. this pattern that we are seeing, again, very selective when Moriarty does it. She's always seems to be a pal of criminal defendants, except when she makes them the defendant a cop. But this pattern in general, when we're talking about these disciplinary files, I haven't seen it. It's not to say that it's not there, but I certainly have not seen it as pervasive as what they keep spewing out over and over here about law enforcement.
What about what about other counties? And then go get your second point too, because I don't want to hold you off.
My second point is one that just really irks me. Okay, in state and federal courts, every trial there is a jury instruction that tells juries to consider the credibility of a witness when analyzing their testimony. Okay, let's remember that Mary Moriarty was Kevin Burke's judicial clerk. Okay. The retired judge didn't mention that during his interview yesterday, and it wasn't mentioned in the Star Tribune. I think it's important for your listeners to know that.
I have mentioned that during multiple other interviews. That's
you have.
That's on me.
You were one of the first ones. No, you were one of the first ones early on in Trooper Lonergan's case to say this did not smell right.
No.
You watched the video. Yep. You were fair about the video, and you said, I don't see the crime. You were frankly one of the only ones out there, and I'm just about to give a speech on some of the media's handling of this case in particular. You were one of the only ones to actually call this out for what it was since day one. A lot of the others kept putting their finger on the scale, their thumb on the scale in order to try to go after my client, and I very much appreciate that. But I also think when some of the stuff we're hearing from experts, I think it's important to say, hey, listen, some of these experts have a previous relationship where they want to protect somebody. And I think that that is certainly the case here because, listen, Mary Moriarty, let's not make any bones about this. She's a disaster for cops. She's a disaster for Hennepin County. She's a disaster to the state of Minnesota. We need to stop defending her. We need to stop defending her to keep our streets safer. Because she is doing exactly the opposite. I credit her, as you just said, she ran on that.
Yep.
That's exactly how she ran.
Okay,
and we got exactly what she said she was going to do. But it needs to end.
Okay, so again, Chris Maddle, prominent local defense attorney, you can hear, very reluctant to give his opinion. For her to come on, and she's been on this show before, and she will be again. For her and her supporters to say, all of you can be mad at me, but I told you how I was going to operate. You all knew it, and I'm following up on this. And the citizens decided in the last election that they wanted me over my opponent, so you shouldn't be surprised one bit. And also come back, because you're about as visible as any attorney we have, for Chris Maddle to say I'm a disaster is a dramatic exaggeration.
Yeah. Okay. Look at the record. Look at exactly what law enforcement's reputation and their you know, I have always experienced throughout my career a very cozy relationship between prosecutors and law enforcement. I have spoken to dozens, if not well over 100 cops that don't want a thing to do with her. People writing me constantly and saying, I am afraid to do my job in Hennepin County. I am afraid to pull out my gun and because I think that somebody might prosecute me in Hennepin County. Is that what you want? Is that what you want? You want cops hesitating? Because in my view, what's really happening right now, they lost the defund the police in a vote among Hennepin County and City of Minneapolis voters. What they're doing now is defunding the police in a different way. They are making it impossible for people to want to be police. So right now, everybody is saying, don't make me go to the city of Minneapolis. Don't make me go to Hennepin County. I'll go anyplace else to stay away from those nutballs.
They are accomplishing
the objective just in different means.
Let me get a couple more questions in before we run out of time. In other counties in the metro area, where I know you've had clients, whether it's Ramsey, mm-hmm. Tacoma, Washington, how different right now in 2024 is their Brady policy compared to what Moriarty's office has put into play?
I happen to know that the State County Attorneys Association has been working on a policy on this for quite some time. I know that a former assistant Hennepin County attorney that is now the Anoka County attorney, Brad Johnson, has been leading that effort and has been talking about it a lot internally and has been following this sort of thing. They have been contacting the police and saying, listen, with respect to the witnesses that we're going to be calling at trial, is there anything in this person's file? Same thing is true at the U.S. Attorney's Office. You will find these prosecutors say, hey, listen, I want to either look at these files or I want to talk to the people that are in charge of it. I have never seen in my career a Hennepin County attorney go to court and try to get judges to compel them, which is now left to myriad decisions that go one way or the other in various cases. And now you've got some judges granting them, looking at these things in camera, which means, you know, on their own confidentially. And you have some judges, like in this most recent case, she tried to get Trooper Londrigan's disciplinary history in another case when he followed somebody into a basement that, surprise, surprise, was a felon in possession, had a firearm. He went in there with Minneapolis police. She has to get his disciplinary records and all the other cops' disciplinary records. When this person obviously was caught on a helicopter going in there, felon in possession of a firearm and in possession of drugs. Why is this making us safer? Why is this prosecutor standing behind criminal defendants and their attorneys and helping them do their jobs? I believe in the advocacy system. And believe me, if there's going to be a case where I think that the state or the government is holding back exculpatory evidence, I am going to be on that and pressing it as hard as I can. That is my job as a defense attorney. But I do not feel that myself, my firm, my family are safer with Mary Moriarty helping me in that effort.
One
that
last thing.
Not right.
Yeah, one last thing. In court yesterday, Stephen Bailey, the individual where the charges are that he drove four times over the limit and killed two individuals at Park Tavern, injured others, was granted supervised release after he posted $500,000 bail into sober living facility. Does that surprise you that he was granted that release?
No. No.
Is that standard? Fairly standard?
It's not standard. It's not surprising that happens in Hennepin County nowadays. I can tell you, if that happened outstate, you would have a far different consequence. If that happened in federal court, he wouldn't have been released prior to trial, and he'd be serving a federal sentence.
Chris, I always appreciate it. Thank you so much for reaching out. You know we'll reach out again.
You bet. You bet. Thank you.
Chris Maddle, 51 past 2 on CCO.